You are now listening to a member of the Disney Podcast family. Head over to Disney Podcast Family on Instagram to see all the latest posts for this show and links to other great Disney podcasts.
There was an idea. The idea was to bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they could become something more.
I have an army.
We have a Hulk.
This is The Tribe, brought to you by Walt's Apartment Podcast and The Diz Insider.
Avengers!
Assemble.
Man, love that intro. Love that intro. Welcome, everybody, to The Tribe. I am one of your trio co-hosts, Blurred Hulk. We are going to be talking about X-Men 97. And before we get into that, let me introduce my other of the dynamic trios here. First, we have here Sam, a.k.a. Do we call you Queenpin?
We do. I like Queenpin. On the show, we call you Queenpin.
I like Queenpin better than the podcast princess. So we have Queenpin here. And then we got Mr. Lou Knight, Mr. AKA Lou, skip to my Lou. Lou everything. Lou is about to give us perspective. Yes, Lou Universal, give us perspective of the X-Men 97. I have to come up with the X-Men Lou version for your nickname. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really good. I'm excited for tonight's episode. Excited to talk X-Men 97. I'm stoked on it.
And Queenpin, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited that some of the things that we predicted, anticipated in our last episode came to fruition for us. So I'm excited. Let's talk.
Yeah. So I got to share a little confession with the audience. So I planned this. It's just because I was really hoping my expectations for this show was really high. And I shared this with you guys. But I watched X-Men 97 in my PJs with a bowl of cereal. And it really did take me back to the 90s and stuff in my childhood and stuff like that. In fact, I actually don't know why. I think Disney missed a really good opportunity for this drop. I wish they would have done it on Saturday. If this was a Saturday morning drop, that would have been even better and stuff. But I still, as an adult, was able to be in my PJs, eat my cereal, and watch this as a grown ass man. So it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was really good too. The animation was great for what they gave us. The storyline that they gave us fit in perfectly. It ended up presenting it as a sequel to the original X-Men show. And we got a solid timeline and we got to see things fall into the right place. So I was happy for that.
Absolutely. So they had, so with X-Men 97, you know, they made some modest but really cool improvement. The animation is a lot more crisp, a little bit more vibrant than it was back in the 90s. They made some character changes. We got some of our old voice actors back, but they also added some additional new ones and stuff for good reasons and stuff. Jubilee is one that they did change because Jubilee is of Asian descent. And so they got an Asian voice actor who's a really good voice actor to play Jubilee. But the person who played Jubilee is also voicing another character on the show, which will come out later on in the season. So we got the OG Storm, who played Storm back in the day. She's playing Storm today. And I gotta admit, I can't tell the difference. Like I know the early 90s to today, a lot of years has gone by, people's voices change and everything else, but I'm gonna be honest, the original characters who came back to the show, I couldn't tell any difference in whatsoever. And it was kind of really cool to see that happen. So What's your guys' initial hot takes on this show?
I thought they did a great job, honestly. Picking up right where they essentially right where they left off a little bit, a couple months past the attempted assassination on Professor X, and being able to see that, you know, the things that they were dealing with were not very different than they were when we were watching this show many moons ago. You still had Magneto as an issue. Okay. You still had, for me, I really liked the fact that it was a continuation that wasn't too different.
Absolutely. Luke? What was your rank this 1 through 10? Nope. Before we go, what's your ranking?
The first two episodes? Yeah. Seven and a half. Do both.
Give me episode 1 and then episode 2 when we talk about episode 2. So what do you rank with episode 1?
7.5.
7.5? Okay. All right. That's solid. Lou, Mr. Knight, what's your hot take and your ranking?
For me, one thing that stood out, and Sam kind of mentioned it, the animation. Obviously, it's in my wheelhouse. That's what I enjoy. And I like that they didn't overdo anything. And for me, when I originally saw it, I thought they were like older episodes that were sitting in the vault somewhere. And they're like, hey, let's just remaster these and release them. Like, it was so seamless. I haven't had a chance to go back and watch it again. So for me, it really still seems like they didn't do nothing new. As for like a lot of the characters and stuff like that, one of my favorite parts, and we chatted about this in our chat, was Cyclops. We got the Cyclops that we remember. Gambit, we got the Gambit we remember. I mean, if for a minute there, I'd be lying if I didn't say that first episode was hard for me to take it serious, because I remember watching the animated X-Men, but I grew up with the X-Men films. So for me, Cyclops wasn't always the big baddie. He was the secondary. So for the first episode, it took me a little bit to get used to it, but then I bought into it even more than I thought I was going to, simply because the fact that they were all some badasses in there. I mean, you saw the personality, you saw the snarl comments, you saw the relationship between Rogue and Gambit. Like, I like that for the most part, they're really still sticking to the core of what made X-Men X-Men. Like, it's not like they came in and change some things that made things different. Like, to your point, they changed things that would make it better, but not making it different.
They made them more comic book accurate.
Mm-hmm.
They gave them the personalities that they had in the comic books. I did want to speak to the fact that you said, like, it was seamless, but they did it in such a way that somebody who didn't watch the prior TV show could jump right in and enjoy it, and it made sense. You didn't have to consume every episode of X-Men before this, X-Men the Animated Series before this, to understand what was happening and to enjoy it. You could hop right in and be a new, like my 8-year-old could hop right in and understand what was happening. I appreciated that too.
See, for me, I have a little different take, because I wasn't sure. I was watching this knowing all the background stuff that led into episode 1. And I want to agree with you, Sam. 100%, I do. I wish I watched it with my kids, because they didn't see the cartoons and stuff. And I wanted to make sure I'm not seeing this from a perspective of I know what happened, how that went down, and all the background information and all that stuff and the relationships and stuff. I really truly wonder what a fresh set of eyes on this. And I think it's true that someone who had never seen the show before wouldn't feel left out of the experience.
I don't think you need to understand that. You don't need to understand the backstory. Us being us.
Yeah.
And the reason that we are the tribe, we want to understand how everything is interconnected and make the backstory fit. Mm-hmm. I think that for today's generation of kids to come in and see an animated series, they don't necessarily need that to jump in and enjoy it and take the story from where it is now further.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to say something?
For my rating, it's hard, because for what I got, I'm at like a 7, 7.5. But at the same time, I'm very much a 9, 9.5. And the reason being is because this show, like I shared on previous episodes, I wasn't going in expecting anything. I didn't have low expectations. I didn't have high expectations. The only expectation that I had was I'm going to have fun watching this like I did when I was younger, whether it was X-Men, Gargoyles, but just like you shared, that Saturday morning cartoon vibe. When that intro song kicks, I was in. Let's go. I wasn't really watching it to see story. I wasn't really watching it like, oh, how are they going to play this? No, I watched it as if I was Ethan or Andrew, just enjoying it. So for me, story-wise, I'm on a 7.5. I thought it was good, but obviously it's very early. But for just what they gave us that first episode, I think I got to stand a 9 because I had a lot of fun watching it, and it gave me that nostalgia aspect. And the story hit on both the animated side and the way they delivered it. The marketing team did great. Like, for marketing, and it's kind of off the road a little bit, for marketing, this might be Disney's, Marvel's, Disney Plus, probably top tier advertisement. The way they marketed this, I really think they hit it out of the park.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Go ahead. Go ahead, David. No, you go ahead.
No, one of the things I like about, and I'm not going to take away credit from Disney and their marketing team, but what I am going to do is that just kind of re-put out there that Marvel as a IP has its own organic marketing. I mean, there's a lot of IPs that Disney has that puts out there that don't have, like, I mean, Marvel and Star Wars, there are so many podcasts, forums dedicated that's outside of the that will, you know, if the marketing team kind of just kind of throws stuff at the wall, it will spread like wildfire because there's this baked in, built in marketing machine that's organic and stuff to it. So it's for me, I want to give some credit to them. Like I think when they came out the VHS, the poster for it, amazing, loved it. I was like, oh, that's definitely putting your head together and stuff on that. How it's kind of releasing some of the kind of the tidbits, the bringing back some of the cast and just kind of putting that stuff out there. Absolutely. Bravo, you know, your marketing department. But for the most part, it was the fan. It's the organic fan base that carried that hype for that show. And I was hyped. In fact, so much so, I gave it a 9.7. You see what I did there? 9.7.
I see what you did there, and I can't stand it. The 9.7, like, why could you go 5 or 10? Oh, my gosh.
Like 9.7, I'm sticking with that.
I love the creativity on that score, but come on, man.
I love your reaction on that because, yeah, I'm really 10 toes deep in that score now. That's 9.7 for the first
before
episode.
I'm with it. Before we dive into what the first episode is, I would like to talk a little bit about how the actual storytelling is so soap opera-y that I like it gives it, you're giving each character's like personal story and how they are still struggling with the things that they were struggling with personally in the original series. I love that they told a compelling story and they used their personality traits to do that. So
I have a question about that. And I might ask this episode. Favorite character in episode one?
Favorite
Who character? Who really stood out to you as a character?
Magneto. He stands out in every single scene.
Well, he was in there briefly for episode one, yeah.
But I mean, as far as the first two episodes. You mean just in episode one?
Episode one. I know David was sharing. We're going to go back around for episode two with our breakdown and our score. So episode one. For me, I'm going Gambit. I thought Gambit was fun. I really enjoyed his, like, in between the lines between Wolverine and Cyclops. I thought Wolverine was, as much as I was excited to see him, I thought he was the least amusing character. But for me, favorite character in this episode, episode one, was Gambit. I think he stole the show for me.
Okay.
My favorite character, try not to be biased on this because I have three that kind of circles with me. And I'm going to disqualify two of them, but I'm going to circle back to them in the next episode. So Cyclops, man, I was waiting to get that Cyclops back, but he is not my favorite on this episode. Huh. And then Storm, who is the goddamn goddess on Earth, Omega level mutant, also not my favorite character in this episode. Why? Only because Morph. Oh my freaking god! The comic relief. He's back. I mean, he's doing. We're gonna get the cameos we kind of want to get through him. He's gonna shapeshift into all the characters that we really want to see and stuff. And I already know that's how they're gonna do it. We're gonna get. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get. If we get Spider-Man, like I asked when we talked about the pre-show, it's gonna be because Morph into Spider-Man. He is the walking embodiment of the cameos for the show. So and he's funny and he likes to razz Wolverine and he's really mm-hmm. the only one that can do that and stuff and get away with it. So was the breakout character that for episode one for me. So
I appreciate that. If I'm going just episode one, I'm probably going to stick with Cyclops. Mm-hmm. But once we get to episode two, the fact that Magneto literally steals every scene is going to be.
I can't. It's going to be my choice. Hard to disagree with that because his wordplay and everything else, and also to Sam's point about it being kind of a soap opera. That's how they were and stuff. I mean, that's again more comic book kind of accurate versus movies. Movies is kind of really that overall storytelling, like each and every part has to kind of align towards that single focus of the storyline. You can't kind of be all over the place, and because this is to be continued, and this piece picked up here.
Each character has their own story that's developing.
Yeah. They have their own shit and their own stuff, their own mm-hmm. everything.
It's like watching like Friends. It's like watching Friends. They all have their own.
I won't their watch own that things. Show. What the hell's a
or friend? Seinfeld. We are friends.
Living single? Yeah. It's like maybe watching that. But okay. Anyway, yeah.
I was born in 89, sir. I do not even know what you're talking about.
Were you really? Damn, I was a whole ass 11-year-old in 89.
Lewis was born in 90.
Whoa. I didn't disclose my year.
Youngins. You did. You just outing. You're outing people. You're that. Maybe he didn't want that. He probably hasn't came out to his parents yet about what his year is. You going to throw that out there on the podcast like that?
Sorry, Mama.
I didn't know where you were going with that one. Coming out, I was like, "Whoa, what?" The conversation just switched.
His mom doesn't. Hey, his mom, you know, she. You're not Mama Lou didn't know.
Year, it's quite okay.
Yep. Mom didn't know. Now mom knows more about me than she needed to know. Great.
Yep.
All right, you guys ready to dive into episode one?
Let's do it. You want to do the kind of a short and dirty recap?
You go for it, man. I don't ever do anything short and dirty. Oh, can we strike that out of this?
Interesting. That's not all we've heard, but okay.
So basically, this episode is pretty much it takes place a couple months after the tragic events of Charles Xavier passing. Which, you know, if you know, he's probably not really dead. Dead. He is on. He was taken to another planet. Because they believe that was the only way that can possibly save his life, or at least save a piece of him, his conscience or whatnot. But anyway, they're X-Men, they're kind of reeling with that. Cyclops, Scott, and Jean, you know, they're pregnant with a newborn and they're contemplating their lives on X-Men. Like, and, you know, maybe, you know, Jean's trying to convince them to, like, well, maybe we just need to kind of step away. Let's raise a family.
there is a new mutant who's been captured, and held with all of his sense.
Sorry, I was going to say Roberto da Costa. He's kidnapped by Friends of Humanity.
Yeah, and that his name is Sunspot because he can harness the power of the sun. But yeah, he's kidnapped by the FOH. I used to say that, man, F out of here, but it's Friends of Humanity, which is a mutant supremacist. Anti-mutant supremacist group, and you'll see a lot of interweaving between civil rights, human rights issues, just current issues, because that's how X-Men was actually created and stuff by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, and I asked someone just kind of put this out there. A lot of people talking about X-Men's going woke and X-Men ain't never been asleep. They've been woke this entire freaking time since the 60s and stuff. Sunspot is being held, or Roberto is being held by Friends of Humanity.
And then Storm, Bishop, and Cyclops rescue him, and he is taken to the X-Men mansion, and
let's talk about that rescue though. I just wanted to talk about the rescue because I love they're using the collars and stuff to dampen the mutant powers and stuff, and the first thing we get the resemblance that something's about to go down is when their breath kind of frosts out when they're talking, and then they're like, oh, wait, what's going on? And then in comes Storm with her grandiose speech, hoping that will be enough to scare the crap out of the Friends of Humanity. It doesn't, because they got Sentinel tech and blasters, and so they just kind of go ham. And then we get Cyclops come in, badass Mr. Fight, scene, everything else and stuff. I know. The only reason why, hold on, because there's a scene in here where he's kicking butt, he saves Roberto, and then he managed to get blasted by the Sentinel ray, and then got the little I forgot what you call those little we call it the net thing, got caught up in that. And they ended up taking his visor, and he's sitting there begging, no, don't stop, please. I surrender. Don't take my visor. As they took his visor off, and he's and blew the hell out of the building. Anyway, I wanted to say that because there's the Easter egg right after that explosion after the explosion in that building, the newspaper that falls down, we actually get to see two characters that weren't connected actually in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because they're Sony properties. But we saw Eddie Brock's name as the writer for the Hellfire Ball article that's in the newspaper, and the photographer who was Peter Parker. So wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. That was kind of talked about that in our last episode. We were hey, we think this is gonna be about the Hellfire Ball, and we're gonna see that because we saw that in the trailer, right?
Yes, yes. So they didn't change it, they didn't mess with us in the trailer. That's really what happened. So that was kind of cool. But sorry, go ahead.
Sam. Oh, I was saying Roberto Sunspot is at the X-Men mansion, and that's where he meets Jubilee, who is trying to befriend him, but Roberto's not having it.
She's the perfect one too, because we kind of got to see things a little bit through his point of view, just like we did with Jubilee on episode one when X-Men first started. This was kind of her point of view and stuff, and so it was kind of cool to kind of see that kind of updated, but also
come full circle,
rehashed. Yeah, that was kind of cool. Even though he's kind of a jerk, he really comes across like he really is not a fan of his powers, but I get it.
mutants have a bad reputation, and you want to be normal for the most, for some of them, they want to be just be normal. And he's a rich kid, you know, come from wealth and power and everything else. And being a mutant and everything else kind of throws a kink in his life trajectory and stuff. So
for sure. He just wants to do his thing. I think the next scene that we see is the one between Cyclops and Jean Grey, who is very, very pregnant. And he's struggling being the leader right now in the wake of Charles Xavier being gone. And he is, you know, Jean Grey being Jean Grey, she's trying to tell him, hey, maybe we leave the team when the baby is born. What do you guys make of that?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a very interesting approach, especially so early. But then at the same time, they kind of, I don't want to say retconned it, they didn't do that. But they, within a few minutes, we learn we can't do this yet. So I was stoked about that. Because for a minute there, after like doing some homework about the cliffhanger and how it picked up, and I was like, really? So we're going to lose, we lost Professor X, now we're going to lose Jean Grey and Cyclops? Like, that's a lot to take in. And then I was worried, like, are they going to start funneling in new characters that we're not quite exposed to yet? But we learn within a few minutes that that is not happening just yet. So I have a feeling that that's how they're going to probably end the season or the seasons, whatever, once this all comes to throughout. I feel like Jean Grey and Cyclops will be the next ones to take off into the sunset. That's a very early prediction.
So, yeah, no, absolutely. I know a little bit background about the story arc and where I think that was heading. And again, episode two kind of gave me confirmation for that. Because, you know, Jean Grey was trained to kind of be the replacement for Charles Xavier and stuff. Because they're both for telekinesis. And she's, you know, she's used Cerebro, and she was his protege. So it was kind of odd that, you know, and it's not odd, I'm sorry, in the sense that, yes, it's a very humanistic thing. We have a family. We have a baby coming. Maybe we should step away. We don't want to put our kid in danger and anything else, and let's do that. So it does make sense. It's just the decision to kind of do that, it seemed it didn't come with a lot of soul searching and thought, but we weren't introduced to that. It could have been. It just, it wasn't what I've seen. So it seemed like it was kind of hasty, especially after the death of Charles and stuff. Like, maybe you want to kind of keep the clan together and hold everything up and stuff, versus, you know, let's table the talk about leaving, get things settled, and then late, maybe a year or so, we'll consider that and stuff. But yeah, that's what I thought about that little conversation that we had and the little soap bopper.
So the next thing I think we see is Roberto running away from the mansion. He goes to a nightclub.
The Wolverine. He was in the hologram room.
Okay,
She was trying to get him to kind of flex his powers a little bit and stuff, and stuck him in the hologram room, because that's what happened to her. And he wouldn't. He kept, you know, talking smack, and then just, it was like a video game to him. He's like, okay, yeah, this is really going to do something to me. And then Wolverine shows up, and, you know, pinned him to the ground, because he said something, some lewd comment to Jubilee. And then he told Jubilee to end the program, and he realized that Wolverine is real. He really he wasn't part of the simulation. I love that part. That was really good. Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that's when we got introduced to Wolverine again.
Yes, and that, I mean, well, we get to see him again in the nightclub scene, because Morph has given him a little bit of a help. Little bit of hell. So Roberto runs away from the mansion, ends up at a nightclub, and we see a whole bunch of random shit happen there. Everybody's got their own things going on in this nightclub. So it's Wolverine, Morph, Rogue, Gambit, and Jubilee. They tracked him down. And at the club, Morph is poking fun at Wolverine over Jean Grey. like, well, she didn't have a baby with you.
Yeah. My perfect baby with my perfect man.
Yeah. He's the only one that can do that. Morph is the only one that can poke the bear like that and stuff.
So. Mm-hmm. And then Cyclops and Storm are tracking down Trask to ask about the Sentinel technology. And then Jean is using Cerebro to comb his mind to find out if, like, where the facility is. He ends up going haywire in that process. And then that forced Jean to have visions of the baby and a new master mold and some carnage that is to come for mutants. So do we want to go into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, I mean, the Cerebro kind of maybe unlocked some things. I'm trying to tiptoe around it without jumping in. I don't think this is the real Jean Grey anyway. And so it's kind of helping her unlock some mysteries about herself and what's going on and stuff. And that's what that was about. And I think episode 3, we're going to get more insight to that vision that she had while she was in Cerebro there. One of the cool things I liked about the club scene, and what I kind of just like overall about X-Men, is like, so like when Rogue was looking out into the crowd, she was kind of sad. We got to actually experience that because she's watching these people dancing and touching and kissing, and she knows she can't do that and stuff. And so you got to see a little bit of that. Like, you know, the cool thing about not only showing off the powers that people have, you show off the struggles that they have dealing with the powers that, you know, that they've been given and stuff. And it's not all happy and rainbows and stuff. I mean, yeah, when I was a kid, I wanted to fly, right? But I never thought about, like, I can fall, or the negative side of my powers and stuff like that.
So. But I feel that's something that they do a really good job of, even when we were kids watching this, is showing that there are limitations to being a mutant. You are not a perfect species because you're a mutant. You're not a perfect species because you're a human. And I think that was something that, like, Professor X is basically, you made his mission was, hey, we all have faults. We all have strengths. And that's how he was trying to bring the human and mutant race together. But I like that that's being carried over, and we are seeing there are limitations to powers, and those limitations being played out on screen so that we can still build those emotional attachments to these characters. Like I said, it's a soap opera. If you cannot emotionally invest in the character, it's whatever. Like, for me, that being able to emotionally invest in a character is what keeps me watching. When I can't emotionally invest in a character because they're so out of reach, I am less likely to watch. That's just how I am.
Absolutely.
That's just my take on that. So they follow Jean's, visions, end up in the Sahara Desert, where they end up getting into a fight with Sentinels, and they win. They save the day.
I love that. Oh my God. So the scene where, you know, they're flying into the Sahara Desert, and the Sentinel comes and, like, chops the, you know, the it's not, I want to say X-Wing, it's not the X-Wing, half, and, you know, expels all the X-Men as they're falling, and the ones that can fly went to go save the ones that can't, and you see Scott with the little shit and eating grin on his face, and he's like, good job, I'll see you on the ground. And for a second, I thought they, like, changed his powers. I was like, what do you mean I'll see you on the ground? You can't fly, dude. What are you talking? And then this dude busted out with his I-beam and power punched the ground until he landed into a superhero stance. I was like, oh my God, yes. The Cyclops, the leader, the confidence that this guy has. Like, I was. That was probably by far one of the best superhero landings of all the Marvel's properties I've seen. That right there, bar none. That was dope.
So when I go to the park with my daughter, she always asks me, Mom, which superhero should I land like this time? When she jumps off of the top of like the monkey bars or whatever, she's always like, how should I land? Like we have this rock wall thing that she jumps off of. And usually she ends up doing a Black Widow stance. I think that may be her new favorite one though. she may be trying it out. So we see back at the mansion. Roberto decides that the X-Men they're not the right place for him right now. Leaves his business card with Jubilee, makes his way, and we see the team is getting prepared for their rematch of their basketball game. And the mansion security system detects that there's an intruder.
Yep.
And who is that intruder, gentlemen?
Mr. Magnus, a.k.a. Eric, a.k.a. Magneto.
Who the X-Men are just realizing has been left everything by Charles Xavier.
Yep. And according to his will.
That's about where this episode is leaving us.
Which I thought that was a great addition to the show. Because, like,
that's where the storyline is. That's where the storyline goes.
Like, so it makes so much sense. We talked
about that. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't think Cyclops is a bad leader at all. I think he's solid, especially what we've seen so far this first episode. But the X-Men, I mean, even in the films, you saw, like, even though Magneto was, you know, is the, I wouldn't say he's a villain. He's more of just a very,
he's
is it too
villain.
Much to call him like the Malcolm X of X-Men?
No, I mean, literally, even though that is not the, it's not the original intent, but after seeing the interactions in the time period that X-Men came out, and the parallels, coincidental or not, he is more of the X-Men. I mean, I'm sorry, he is more of Malcolm X of anything of the civil rights movement. Same in the cartoon. He is very much similar to Malcolm X and his take and position on, like, I'm not here to, we tried being your brothers. We tried being equal. We now just want, we're going to get our rights to exist by any means.
We're going to make basically. It happen regardless. And yeah. Yep. And that is Magneto.
So yeah, that's fair commentary. Yeah.
He is a champion for the mutants and only the mutants because we've tried to play this game. There.
Yeah.
We've tried to play this game and it didn't work. So we're going to have this equality, whether you like it or not. I agree. That is a definitely good take on Magneto, Lou. We've found out that, you know, he has been using his powers against the FOH to rescue the Morlocks. And then the human world wants to put him on trial for his past crimes. And the X-Men are divided on whether or not to trust him. Mm-hmm. So now that he's there, Cyclops and Jean are uncertain about whether they should leave. Because before they were like, okay, when the baby's here, we're gone. And now they're like, maybe not.
Yeah, I'm sure about the hands that X-Men is in now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Jean is telling Storm that she is worried or anxious about her baby being born a mutant. Mm-hmm. Which I feel like if Magneto heard that, he would not, not be very happy. He'd be like, girl, what?
But I think I get it. It was a very real moment. I mean, it really is like, I don't want the adversity. I don't want all the issues. I don't want all the stuff that we had to deal with, all the shit we had to deal with. So I got that. That was a very raw moment.
As a parent, that makes complete sense because you don't want your kids to go through the shit that you had to go through. You want better for your kids. No. And I mean, Storm comes in and says the same thing. She's like, I wonder what it would be like to be human. And that I think is a very, very real moment. And it's something that, like, as parents, we find that incredibly relatable. We don't want our kids to go through the shit that we've gone through. We want more for them and better for them. And that's kind of like where that soap opera Eve comes back in for me in this episode. It's like, this is a mom who has concern for what her child's future is going to be like. So I really liked that aspect.
Absolutely. And Storm, you know, brought it home with the fact that, look, the path that who I am has brought me all the stuff I have, even the good stuff in life. Like I got, you're my sister, you know, this family, I got all of this, and I wouldn't change that for the world and stuff. So, you know, it was really kind of saying, regardless of the trials and tribulations your kids are going to go through, there's going to be a greater path and a purpose for that and stuff. And I really love, it really was a touching moment and stuff for them. So
how do we feel about Magneto and Rogue getting closer and Magneto insisting that Rogue's powers can't hurt Magneto?
So they have history and they're kind of talking. I love, this is one thing I do love about X-Men. They'll have conversations interactions and not explain anything until later. For us, it's like, oh, wait, what's going on? So I know they actually dated and they actually had a relationship and all that stuff, but the general audience didn't. And there was a point in time, a lot of the cartoons I've watched of X-Men, I didn't know what the background story was. I just knew that, you know, like when Bishop showed up for the first time, I was like, wait, what? What's the background? And then we didn't get that until later episodes and stuff. So I love that they do that. They just have these casual conversations that we're kind of glued to. Now we're like, wait, what's going on there? Like, what's with these two?
You're like, I'm telling you, that's where like that soap opera sitcom comes in. There's like so many different elements that are coming in and all these different character interactions. We've got Jean and Cyclops going through their things, and then we've got Storm and Cyclops conversation. We've got Magneto and Rogue. Like, there's so many different elements, and it just brings it brings their human traits. They're not human, but their human-esque traits to light and shows us what Professor X, you know, tries to get the rest of the human race to understand is they're just like you. They go through the same trials and tribulations. They just have different powers. And I like that they're showing that in the show.
It took me a little bit to wrap my head around the whole Rogue and Magneto thing. Just, again, going back to being raised watching the movies, that just seemed like a huge age difference and age gap. But then I had to, like, remind myself that in the show and in the animated series, they're more closer in age than they were portrayed on screen. Same with Gambit and Rogue in the first episode. It took me a little while, and it's still taking me a little while to adapt to what the animated series is and adapt to what the films did for us. So for me, the Magneto and Rogue thing still doesn't sit well with me. Still a bit odd, but let's see how it plays out in the rest of the series.
And it's messy. I mean, you got Gambit and Rogue. I mean, Gambit's heartbroken. His card.
You've got Jean and Cyclops and Wolverine. Like,
Well, Wolverine.
There's love triangles all over the place.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Good point. I didn't think of Wolverine, Cyclops.
Wolverine can handle that. That dude's old enough. He's been through enough emotions and stuff that he can just be. He's a bitter person. So what changes? He's a little bitter about losing out to Cyclops and stuff. So I don't feel as bad for him, and the relationship of Cyclops and Jean as I do Rogue and whatever Magneto is trying to rekindle with Rogue and stuff. So. But, you know, and Wolverine, I know he's great as a loner, but he's also dope as part of the team. So I probably should. I don't know. I'm coming off of watching some dating reality shows. And so it's kind of tweaking my view.
Or Love's an Island or whatever it is. We're
watching Perfect Match. And there's an asshole on this show. And I was kind of tweaking my thing. I was like, little Wolverine kind of qualities and stuff. So I don't feel too bad for Wolfie there. But yeah, no, there's love triangles in the show.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Nope. No, go ahead. I was going to take us to our next scene. You got something else to add? Add it.
No, go.
I was saying Magneto's been picked up by the government.
Yes.
To take him to his trial.
He voluntarily surrendered.
And some of the X-Men decide that they are going to join him. They're going to accompany him to his trial. And then there are anti-mutant protesters that are outside of the trial. There is an FOH member wearing a mask, super suit, the executioner.
Yes.
And then Magneto gives his speech about his history as a man and as a mutant. He's interrupted when protesters break into the facility. The X-Men try to de-escalate the situation, fighting off Executioner. Storm and Magneto are protecting the judges. Storm gets hit by Executioner's dart, which we realize later is filled with enough radiation to kill a mutant, or not kill, but depower a mutant.
Yeah.
And that
he converted that. He converted the collar into that. He took the power source from that collar and converted it into a sniper beam and stuff. And so.
And that pisses Magneto off. And he ends up transporting Executioner and the judges into the atmosphere, threatens to kill them, ultimately shows them mercy. And the United Nations gives Magneto a full pardon. And then there's a conversation to fold Genosha into their jurisdiction, which I wasn't fully sure about that. Like, I didn't understand exactly what was happening there.
So
with them giving Genosha in their jurisdiction, like, why do they want it?
They don't have who won it?
The United Nations.
They don't have it. That's Magneto's. So I missed that part. I may have to rewatch that, but yeah, when Magneto threatened them and stuff, on
when the United Nations gave him a full pardon. And they want jurisdiction over Genosha as well, I thought, as in his full pardon. Did I make that part up? I could be making this part up.
They didn't give him a full pardon. They didn't pardon him. They didn't do that part. So when he took them up into the sky and forced them to look down on Earth to realize it's a much bigger place than what we make it and stuff, and he gave his speech and everything else. We didn't, and maybe I missed this, and I'll rewatch it and stuff. But I don't. We can assume they pardoned him for his crime and stuff because of the events and what happened, and he virtually saved their lives and stuff. But yeah, there was a discussion regarding the notion because he owns that. That's his. Yeah. He took that from the guy who was building the big power base for the Sentinels and stuff, and freed all of the mutants and stuff, and now it's a sanctuary. So that's still, so the UN has, I could be missing that part and stuff, but
the UN has the best interest in gaining Genosha anyways.
Well, yeah, they have the best interest in controlling mutants and stuff too. I agree with that part. Yes.
So during that time, we see that Wolverine and Jean are back at the mansion, and things get a little messy when Jean goes into labor. They go to the hospital where she is refused treatment because she is a mutant. Cyclops and Rogue show up, and Rogue siphons the doctor's medical expertise to perform the delivery herself. That is dope.
Oh, yeah.
And the baby is named Nathan Charles Summers. At the mansion, Beast confirms that. Yes, aka Cable, which David predicted in the
episode before last.
Where we were predicting what we expected for the tribe, for this episode of the tribe. Beast confirms that Storm is depowered for the foreseeable future. She decides she's going to leave the mansion, writes a goodbye letter, and then we see a flash of Cyclops watching over Nathan, Rogue and Magneto touching without her gloves. Poor Gambit. And then Morph and Wolverine bonding. So now there's more more going on here. Like I said, it is a soap opera and everybody's got their things going on. Then Jean finishes reading the letter to the team. They refuse to accept that Storm is gone. Mm-hmm. The doorbell rings and it's not Storm. It's another Jean Grey.
Yep. The real Jean Grey.
The real Jean Grey.
Oh. I don't care what anyone says. We don't have any insight on episode 3. So this is just a mild spoiler. That is the real Jean Grey. So the one that Scott impregnated is something else entirely, which we'll find out. I don't want to be a spoiler because I really do. I kind of have an idea.
I mean, we talked a little bit about her. Yeah, we talked a little bit about her in the last episode. Mm-hmm.
So question, is it still considered cheating if you didn't know it wasn't them?
Great question. No. That's a terrific question.
As a woman, I'm going to say no.
Here's some pieces
of that. Cyclops, hall pass.
Here's some pieces of that I'm grappling with and I'm confused about because they're kind of retconning. Because he knew in the comics that the clone version wasn't, he didn't know it was a clone. He just knew it wasn't Jean Grey. It was another, she went by another name. Here, this is a person pretending to be Jean Grey, as far as we know. So here's my question, and I hope it doesn't derail things and everything else just because, you know, it's like, oh, I know a little too much. The whole reason why Cyclops in episode 1 sent Wolverine to go find Roberto is because he knows his best power is his sense of smell. He can track you anywhere on the planet. Everyone has an individual sense. Why didn't Wolverine pick up on that Jean Grey is an imposter? Like, and maybe he did, and maybe they'll explain this in later episodes, but I'm like, why he can pick up on sense and track you across the planet?
Could what's Wolverine going on also here? Be a clone?
No, Wolverine, I think he's a clone. I hope there's a...
Maybe because he was love-struck.
Yeah, because I think maybe he knew. Maybe he knew.
Maybe her being pregnant, he thought she had a different smell.
Yeah, oh, that's not bad. That could be.
In the comics, Madeline, whatever her name is, doesn't even realize that she is a clone of Jean Grey. Correct. Until, like, she doesn't even know she is. She doesn't know that. Yeah, I mean, she's just living her life thinking she's herself. She doesn't realize she's a clone of Jean Grey.
Mr. Sinister put fake memories in her.
Yeah, he did. And then she ends up getting Sentinel Tech and then finds out that she is a clone. So, I mean, we can't even put the fault on her and saying, like, she was tricking him and, like, making Cyclops think that she was Jean Grey because odds are she doesn't know either. And she wasn't like playing with him.
I agree with that premise. Here's where I don't think she came on board right when she got pregnant because of the Wolverine comment. What do you say? Maybe because she smells different because of the pregnancy. I'm going to be honest. I think the fake Jean was around during the Dark Phoenix, which is around season 3. The fake been around for quite a bit, and Wolvie, who's been acting strange because we all thought it was because of the relationship with her and Scott. Maybe it's for some other reason and stuff. And he's just I don't know. I want this to be explained to me. Like, this is a part of a soap opera. Now, maybe I know soap operas don't always make sense.
What if we find out he was never in love with Jean to begin with, and it was always Madeline, and her smell is what he associates with her?
Could be.
And what if they end up together, and Jean Grey and Cyclops are together?
The show better not screw this up.
I'm telling you, it's a soap opera.
Gotta answer the Wolverine question. Why did he not know this is the fake Jean?
And you know what? I used to watch a telenovela called Cómplices a Rescate, and they were twin sisters, and this is exactly what was happening. Nobody realized that this was kind of what was happening. They didn't know about each other.
I'm afraid that's what they're going to do. They're going to try to suggest that the clone has the same scent as the original person, and I'm calling BS on that already.
Yeah, that would be lame, because that was one of the if you could do that, then Wolverine straight is not that cool.
Yeah, you eliminated his power, one of his powers and stuff like that. Yeah. Don't do that. Please don't do that, Marvel. Don't make it like her clone is exactly the same clone. Yeah, smell, scent, or whatever you want to call that and stuff. Just explain it some other way. I'll take anything, just not that. Don't do that.
That would be interesting.
So, what's your guys' thoughts about Storm, the Omega level mutant that we got introduced to, losing all of her power? She's now just a regular human being.
I wonder for how long.
Yeah, they're saying for the foreseeable future, but what does that mean? I think that Storm's going to show up with her powers when they really, really need her at some point. She's just going to boom back and she's baddie again.
I don't even understand why they went that route.
Same. I hate it.
And not only that, why in episode 2, you're going to like have a key X-Men character go powerless? Like,
that's stupid. It is. I don't like it, but I'm hoping that they have a place where she's going to come back in and just be a baddie beast and save the day. Because I can't think of another justifiable reason for them to do this.
I agree. I think it's stupid, and I hope it happens sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I don't want this to wrap up at like episode 10 and we get Storm with her powers, but no, whatever the story arc that they're about to go through with, which they have in the comic books, make it short, make it meaningful, make it whatever, and then bring her back quickly. So I want her back by mid freaking season. Don't put her off until the end.
I want her back by mid episode 3.
I'm with you on that too, but I didn't like it.
I wasn't a fan of it because why so early and why so early in the season? I mean, do that to Morph. Mm-hmm. Do that to, you know, somebody that's like, not that, I mean, I enjoyed Morph in episode 1, but we've already, I mean, from what I've read up, we've already witnessed Morph die once. Like, do it again.
Yep.
Morph him back into not being here. but I feel like Storm. Make him die again. Storm, if you're playing chess, she's in the back level. She's that back row. She's the rook. She's the king, queen. She's that. You don't just sacrifice your bishop for the fun of it. No.
Yeah. So I'm with you.
It was a weird fight for sure.
I don't like this story arc. I know it plays out in the comic books and stuff, and I don't care. Don't like it. Didn't want to see it, but it happened. They could have done that to Bishop and stuff. I mean, what right now we know that Bishop's tech is broke. He can't go back. He can't return to the future. Beast is working on it, so we know that part. End his energy absorption.
Beast could have been an interesting one to do that. Have Beast go stay in Beast, but he goes back to his human form.
Okay.
I just don't think it was needed right now.
You know, I didn't think it was needed yet. So that's why I'm hoping that there's a bigger play that we just don't see yet as viewers, where it's going to make sense why they did it later. Fingers crossed.
You have a whole new generation of X-Men fans who just watched one of the most powerful mutants just lose all of her powers. It better pay off. That's all I got to say. So,
one of the most iconic ones, too. When you think X-Men, especially animated, Wolverine, Storm, Cyclops, those are your big three.
Yep.
So, we did not rank this episode yet. We jumped right into episode 2 and did not give our rankings because we were excited. I am going to go ahead and I'm going to give this episode an 8.5. I liked it more than the first episode. And the only reason that I'm not giving it higher is because of what we just discussed. Mm-hmm. There were some things that I didn't understand, like why Storm lost her powers. didn't make sense for me.
So, also give us who's your favorite character in this episode. I actually like what Lou said from the first one. So. Magneto.
For me, it's Magneto. Magneto just shows up and steals the show in every scene.
This is a hard one.
I'm going to rank this episode a 7.9. See what I did there?
Sorry. 7.7. because of the storm thing. But Magneto carried. I think his speech was dope. I don't believe he's there for good reasons, but he also shared with us his struggle with, you know, making and keeping a promise. He really kind of sold us on the friendship that he had with his mortal enemy, which was Professor X. And they wanted the same thing. They just had different means of getting there. So he's trying on something new to ultimately get what he wants and stuff. He wants peace. He's trying this cohabitation, even though he grew up knowing being a persecuted by the Nazis and everything else, that peace is not, there's always going to be people who are hateful, but he's like, I'll try optimism for a minute. So let's see. And I love how he ended that big speech he made. Don't make me I had it written down. God, don't make me regret or do something that you will regret or something like that. I should have written that down. But that was probably one of the best fire speeches. And I am going to write that down because I loved it. I think it was because he really put it on them. It's you humans. If I regress back, it's not going to be because of me. It's because of you guys. So don't make me do that. I'm trying a new thing here. So I'll find that speech while Lewis goes on to talk about his ranking and his favorite character. So mine as well was Magneto. I was kind of taken back that little bit that we got him in the first episode. So I was glad to see him on the screen, but I was also excited to see the route they play with him getting all the everything left to him. So Magneto for me steals this episode. But it's hard to rank this show because I think this, I've watched it less invested than we just talked about it now. So for me, I watched it again, the nostalgia factor. So for that, I still go a 9 again. But if I'm going how we discussed it, breaking it down and based off a score off that, I'm sitting around a 7.5. And that might be a pattern this entire series because the fact that I watch these episodes very much in the animated aspect, the same way I watch the animated Star Wars shows. I don't try to relate them too much to the bigger picture. I just enjoy them for what they are. So for me, I'll go 7.5 for what we got, but I'd be lying if I wasn't up towards 9 based on just that it's X-Men 97. It's the animated series back on the big screen. And I just realized here I am doing the 9.7 thing, just like you were, just not as effective.
I'm going back. I'm switching from 7.9 because I was joking. 9.7, same as the first episode. Sorry, 9.7 for me. But the quote was, "Please don't make me let you down." That was probably the most powerful words that was ever. Please don't make me let you down. Right now, you have a peaceful person. You have the Dr. Martin Luther King version that you guys want. Don't make me go back to Malcolm X. Like, do not make me let you down. And I loved it. And that whole speech ate the scene in that closing remarks was like, this is, yeah. Loved it. But yeah, so I'm at 9.7. I just want to keep it relevant with our fans. It's the same for both episodes. I loved it. It wasn't a 10 because I know a 10 is coming. And I'm going to save it for that episode. So predictions and then wrap up. What do you think we're going to get episode 3?
Honestly, I don't even have predictions. I just have wants. I want to see the explanation now of Jean Grey and Madeline, if as is Madeline, and like we talked about with Wolverine, like why didn't anybody say anything? There were people who should have known. How did they not know if they didn't know? And if they did know, why the hell didn't they say anything? I want to see that cleared up.
Yeah.
Me, I don't have any predictions, simply because of the fact that seeing what happened with Storm in this episode, seeing that Magneto wasn't very big and prominent in the first one, seeing all of that, it's really hard to predict what might happen. There's the obvious stepping stones they've set up, but I'm just, if there's a want, though, I'm not going to lie, after we talk about it more, it sits even worse with me. I hope Storm comes back and gets her powers back the way she was. Like, some type of cheesy joke. Hey, we messed up. What are you doing? Be tight. So I have no predictions. I have a bunch of wants, and that's just to keep the series going and stay being good. But overall, I got no predictions because they can go any which way with the animated series, so it's hard to pinpoint one.
All right. I'm going to predict we're going to lose another X-Men. Not through death, just they're going to leave.
Lose their powers or just leave?
This is a purposeful act. They are going to
leave. Who do you think?
Nope. Not going to tell you.
No, come on. This is what we do. We can theorize here.
Hey, I'll play with you. I'm going to say Cyclops.
No, that's not who I was thinking. I was thinking Gambit. I think Gambit's leaving the team.
Why do you think Gambit's leaving the team?
Well, I think it's kind of obvious. I mean, when you're unwillingly in a love triangle and stuff and not really knowing what's going on, I mean, you can't blame the guy. I mean, Professor X is gone. He's, you know, he found out and he found the home he thought he did.
And in charge now, right? Who wants to be in a situation where the person kind of
your boss and your love is like
are touching hands?
Oh, yeah. That's what we're calling it.
I understand that.
I mean, it would be like the love of your life, Sam, dating the principal at your school or something. Like, you have to go teach in another school.
Bless both of their souls.
You want to be around.
No, for sure. So what are your wants for the next episode then, David?
So I want the Wolverine thing cleared up for me. We probably won't get it. It just might be an oversight. And I want more of the detailed story background story of Jean Grey and the fake Jean Grey, which I think we will get. I think the episode will focus predominantly on that. And also, I want to kind of get a sneak peek or introduction in episode 3 of the big baddie. Who is actually the big bad? I think it's Mr. Sinister just because of the Jean Grey thing, but... But yeah. We'll see. I want to see an introduction of the big bad. So
I definitely agree with that. And I think it's Mr. Sinister as well. All right. I think that's all we have this episode. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we close out the tribe for this week? And we'll be back later this week covering the next episode.
Cameos. I think we're going to get a cool cameo through Morph, because that's how he rolls. But I think we'll get an Avenger cameo through Morph. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess
it won't be Namor.
It won't be Namor.
It won't be Namor. It won't be
Namor. Maybe it will be. Just to I'll do a so fan service so for me. So oh my bad. Gosh.
So embarrassed if it is Namor. They're in a water fighting scene, and he morphs, turns into Namor. I would be embarrassed, but because I was so confident that there's no way we're gonna get Namor as a cameo in this.
I mean, it would be dope. I'm not gonna lie. It would be David. David is shaking his head. No, Lou is like, meh, and Sam's over here.
I was gonna make too many modern day joke references, but. Wasn't gonna do that.
Well, I would be down for it.
I don't want to catch a case, so.
Oh my gosh! All right. And with that, this concludes this episode of the Marvel Tribe, where we recapped the first two episodes of X-Men 97, the great reboot. We'll be back soon with the next episode recap. Feel the pulse in your chest so you know you're alive. One team, one love. It's
the Tribe.
We'll see you next time.